Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
And with us again is Ken Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History. And we're talking today, Gavin, Ken, about what stories from 2011 will end up being part of our history books in the years to come, which is sometimes very different from what are the biggest stories of the year, right?
Absolutely. It often is what we focus on day to day in the headlines has nothing to do with what's really important 10, 20, 50 years from now. And I was struck by that, of course, while listening to the ambassador.
The ambassador, Paul Bremer, who was the one-time envoy, the first envoy to Iraq after the war. And, you know, I got to ask you about that because it does feel, I mean, the war just ended. That's very current. And yet it feels as though already historians are beginning to have a line on the Iraq war.
Well, I think that first of all, as a historian, when I look at what just happened there, the first thing that comes to my mind is it ended with a bang, with a whimper, not a bang, excuse me.
Yeah.
When I think of World War II, VE Day, VJ Day, victory celebrations in the street, sailors kissing women in Times Square, there's no sense in America that we've finished something that we feel great about the way we did after World War II. Obviously, very different situations. But two other historical things come to mind as the ambassador is speaking. First of all, Korea. Was the ambassador suggesting that we should be in Iraq for 50 years, as we have
as
been?
As if we had the military bases in South Korea?
We still are in Korea 50 years after the police action, it wasn't even a war, ended there. So that's one question I have. And I have to laugh in a sense when he says better intelligence. We just missed the death of the leader of North Korea. We learned about it after he died from news reports. This reminds me of going back to intelligence during the breakup of the Soviet Union. The CIA was caught with its pants down. So better intelligence coming from this administration or a previous administration really makes me feel the willies. It's not what we've been very good at lately.
You know, if the Iraq War ended with a whimper, does that mean that we will it's going to be a footnote in history, the end of this war?
Well, I think it's hard to answer. Historians, we like to look back, not ahead too much, because we don't know where it's going. Is this going to be the other historic parallel, I suppose, is Vietnam, Cambodia. You know, when we pulled out of there, all the same things were said, and many of them did come true. In Cambodia, there was this terrible period of mass killings that was unleashed on the population. North and South Vietnam did not break apart, did not continue. It was there was also a period of tremendous dread there. But 30 years later, they're our trading partner. And John McCain goes back to Vietnam to visit. So, I you know, you have to take a long view sometimes. What will Iraq be 10 years from now? What will it be 30 years from now? And no one really knows the answer to that.
Although with all the changes that have happened with the military this year, which are involved in because of our wars, both in Iraq and in Afghanistan, maybe that's one of the things that 2011 will be remembered for.
Well, the whole element of the military in involving in these areas is changing radically, and it comes back to the intelligence. We missed what was going on in Egypt as well.
Yeah, that's true.
That's the story of the year in many ways.
That's a very good point.
And we weren't really on top of that one.
Ken Davis, author of Don't Know Much About History, he stays with us. We are looking back at what was historic in 2011 as opposed to what was the biggest story of the day, and I'll be back in just a moment.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology.
That's the name of his books, Don't Wear It Out. His name is Ken Davis, and he's with us again. Good morning, Ken.
I feel like dancing here.
Don't you? Our director, Jay, is in there dancing.
I'm always happy at Sam Cooke and not Herman's Hermits.
So. There you go. I totally agree with you. You know, this is the last show of the year. We have been kind of looking back on the big stories of the year all week long, but this is a daily live news show, which means we are very much about keeping you informed about what's happening right now, the biggest stories currently at this moment. And those are often not the same ones that you are writing about, Ken. The biggest stories of 2011 may not be what the historians will be writing out in 50 years. What makes the difference between a big story of the day and something which ends up in the history books?
It's a great question, and I think it has to do with where it goes rather than what happens today or even next week or, you know, in what happens in the election next year. How does the stone dropped in the water continue to ripple out? And so a lot of the stories that we've been talking about as being important, including the end of Iraq, eventually dovetail together, I think, and that's what makes history. So when we think about Iraq, we also have to think about Arab Spring and the death of bin Laden, because those are all obviously big stories, but they are all interrelated and interconnected. And that's where you have a whole piece of regional history that's going through a transformative moment. And it's very difficult as a historian to predict where it's going, obviously.
Yeah.
But you see this as a moment like, you know, 1914, where or 1918, 1919, where big things changed all of a sudden and they were going to have repercussions that didn't happen for another 20, 25 years. So that's...
And yet it's these repercussions that end up making something historic or not. And that kind
absolutely.
Of relates to two of the most popular things our listeners wrote in as the biggest stories of 2011. Let me start with the first one, which is political dysfunction. Many people said it's this disagreement in Congress, the low opinion of Congress that people remember this as. And to a certain extent, that's only true, I think, if it results in something changing, right?
I think you're completely right, because that's much more the norm in American history than unusual. It's, you know, when you
look cyclical back, too.
It is cyclical, but you know you can look back at failed presidents and failed presidencies, and it's often because there was a Congress that was obstructionist and wouldn't give the president what he was asking for, and we see that as a failed presidency. But sometimes it's just the dysfunction of Congress, and you know, there has always been that element in American history. There's very few moments of true bipartisanship where things actually get done. That's more than the exception than the rule, I think.
And I think that's also true of the Occupy movement, that many people say 2011 will be remembered for that. But again, if nothing comes of the Occupy movement, this will probably not be the year of the occupiers.
Well, I think that it's the year of the occupiers in the sense that you have these two very different strands: the Tea Party, which really emerged earlier on one side of the protest movement, and Occupy Wall Street on the other end of the spectrum. I think that it's two responses to the same problem, which is a government which people see as dysfunctional, and they want to do something about it and change it. What has happened historically with populist movements like this is that they generally get co-opted. You think of the progressive movement of the late 19th century, early 20th century. Teddy Roosevelt adopted that. Interesting parallel, because that's 100 years ago that Teddy Roosevelt enters a presidential race as a third-party candidate,
oh, wow,
as a progressive, and changes history in a sense, because that leads to Woodrow Wilson being elected. Teddy Roosevelt split the Republican vote with Taft. So that's an interesting – and no one was talking in 1911 and 1912 about what was going to happen 5 years later, which was the First World War, and certainly not – another 20 years later, the Second World War. So it's very, very difficult to say this is going to be what we talk about 10 years from now.
On the other hand, many, many listeners, and I want to put this call out to you again. We are still taking your ideas on what you think 2011 will be the year of blank. What will be the story that will be most remembered for this year? 877-8-MY-TAKER. You can post your comment at thetakeaway.org. And we're speaking to Ken Davis, author of the Don't Know Much About History books. The Arab Spring seems to me a bit a little different than the two things we just talked about, simply because there already are repercussions of the Arab Spring. We're already seeing some of the changes in the map, the changes in the globe because of that movement.
Absolutely. And I would like to bring it back to, again, a bigger picture for one second, which is the role of the traditional media and traditional intelligence versus the new media in both of these areas, because
social media.
The Arab Spring, we know, was driven, or we are told, a very large part by social media, the new way of communicating that traditional media and government sources were just way, way behind the curve on. I think the same thing is certainly true of Occupy Wall Street, which started out as this tweet out and website posting from Culture Jamming up in Canada, those crazy Canadians. So I think that's really kind of one thing that ties these protests together, that they're not like the protests of 50 years ago during Vietnam. They're not like the protests of the populist movement. And they caught everybody by surprise in many ways because they came out of this new media.
Although the Arab Spring is a narrative that, ties all these things together, political dysfunction, anger over politics, the economic problems, all in some way comes to a head in the Arab Spring movement and the repercussions. However, I want to get to the stories that maybe we're coming to the end. We're seeing all kinds of look backs. What stories are not getting talked about enough?
Well, I think the one story that maybe as a New Yorker, it seems more important, but I'm going to tie a couple of things together here again. The end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, this 18-year-old policy of homosexuals being allowed to serve in the military but not being able to ask. But if they ask you, that is over. The Obama administration deciding that it was no longer going to defend the Defense of Marriage Act, DOMA. And then New York State legalizing same-sex marriage, of course, the largest state so far to do it, by legislative action, not by a court decision. I think those three things are, when taken together, really were a transformative moment in terms of gay rights, same-sex rights in this country. And how it's going to play out in the campaign, I'm not sure. In 2004, George Bush and John Kerry were essentially on the same page when it came to this issue.
Yeah.
And now you have, obviously, I would imagine that the Republican right is going to be railing against
many of them are talking about repealing it. Yeah.
But it might be a transformational moment. Well, I don't know, but I think that's one of the big stories that hasn't probably been talked about enough. The other is, and it ties into what Occupy Wall Street, I suppose, is this notion that the poverty rate increased so dramatically.
Yeah.
And the end of the middle class. I mean, that's a generational moment. I grew up, my parents were World War II Depression era people. You grew up with the idea that one generation works hard and it makes it better for the next generation.
Yeah.
That feels to a lot of people like it's over. I think that's a moment that we have to look at in terms of, is this a transformational moment again in America? The idea that the rich have too much, that's not a new idea. That goes back to James Madison writing in the Federalist Papers, and just
yeah.
about every president had to address it since.
I'm sure we could probably find it in cuneiform or something. But, why aren't we talking more about the death of Osama bin Laden?
That's a really interesting question. I think it's largely a function, one, of the concentration on the Republican candidates, and they certainly don't want to mention it because it doesn't reflect well on them, and it does reflect well on the president, I suppose. The other thing is that we are lightning fast in terms of what we're interested in. And so, Osama bin Laden, well, that's 10 years ago.
So this summer,
yeah. That is so 26 seconds ago, as they say on one of the commercials. So, and I don't know if that will be an issue, or not even so much remembered as a moment that changes anything. Does it just create a new generation?
Although we have to end here, Ken, but it does sound like a transformation and transition is coming out a lot. Maybe 2011 will be remembered as a year of transition.
Well, going back to your NASA and planet story, the Chinese announced they're going to put a man on the moon. That was my childhood story. We were going to put a man on the moon.
There's Ken's favorite story of the year, perhaps. Ken Davis, author of the Don't Know Much About History books. Thank you so much, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year and happy birthday.
Thank you.
Well, it is the last takeaway of 2011, and let me take this opportunity to wish a happy birthday to our own Kristen Meinzer and, of course, to my co-host today, Celeste Headley, both 25. Happy birthday, ladies. I'm Todd Zawilik, filling in for John Hockenberry.
I'm Celeste Headley. Happy 42-year-old. world is the takeaway.